My name is Derek Montilla, occasionally known as a big-ass piece of shit.
Welcome, everyone, to The Wrestling Show. I'm Cab Manning, along with my cohort, as usual, or shall I say per usual, that's, I think, the proper way, Mr. Billy Body.
That's the worst name that we settled on for the show.
The Wrestling Show. I think that actually is a great name because everyone tries to come up with something, right? They try to be clever and this and that. And it's like, and when anyone refers to something, you go, I'm going to listen to that wrestling show. So I'm like, well, what are we calling it? I said, it's the wrestling show that we do. Otherwise, you know what we've been calling it is the wrestling review show. So it's a wrestling show. And you had a very eventful week because you, sir, were on a podcast. I heard you were on a podcast this week, and it was with Mr. Vince Russo and Mr. Disco Inferno.
You know what's incredible to me? This coronavirus is making the week so slow, right? I feel like that we would have talked about this on the last show, but actually, you're right. I was only on that show 5 days ago.
It was Friday.
And since... Well, Thursday, aired, I recorded it. But yeah, Friday. But then obviously then, since then, I had the email from Vince Russo saying, would you like to come on and do more stuff with us? Which is obviously going to rub certain people up the wrong way. Hi, Derek Montilla.
Hey, well, he's part of this show every time we start it, you know.
We know he's got to be where his name's mentioned, so... He'll definitely be here. His name will be mentioned regularly, even if it's in a negative connotation.
Oh, yeah. Just type his name. He'll see it. He'll get a Google alert so you can have a picture of a donkey eating an apple through a fence. No problem, and he'll get it.
Well, it feels like that was ages ago because there's been development since, but also just this whole fucking lifestyle at the moment is so slow. And even when I'm putting on the wrestling that we're supposed to review right now, it feels like I sat there for the whole afternoon. It honestly felt like when I watched this week's Raw, it felt like it almost went from light to dark. It was so long. I was on Vince Russo's show, and that has turned into him wanting to do more stuff. Obviously, he was convinced by the stuff I said in there. But as I said to you, I've said to Nick as well, but not to our listeners, I was going on there fully expecting to have a disagreement, an argument about things with Disco Inferno, because the whole thing was built up as Disco don't think you're shit, Disco don't believe any of your stuff, you're not a credible source, he's never heard of you, this is not enough for us to believe, what it's not enough for him to believe what any story is, while Vince was on there going, I've done this show, even though he never puts the S on the end of the name.
And he said, what is he on, the Dirty Bird? I'm like, oh, I mean, it started off rough for me because it was, they called it the Dirty Bird. They called it the Dirty Sheet. They said you look like Ryan Satin. It was an avalanche of dog piss to begin. And I'm like, all I'm doing is going, oh, he needed me there as his like fucking lawyer official because I would have stopped the fucking thing right then and scolded them and said, no, for air, I don't want that cut out. I want it on air. And I would have scolded and said, no, you're going to talk correctly. Now get this straight. You're talking to the number one prognosticator over here. So it would have been interesting, but go ahead.
Yeah. So, I agree. I didn't like the Satin comment at all because, I mean, there's a bare resemblance there, but it's like the same resemblance that there is between, Derek and Randy Savage.
If so, yeah, it's like, okay, you have a beard. there you go.
Yeah, and like Disco was like, oh, these wrestling guys look the same. And at first he was like, oh, like going to be, oh, these Brits hate me, so he's going to be biased into it. It's like, and I said straight up, fade away, I didn't attack you, you attack me. I've come on here to defend myself. And then from there, I begin my defense, which is quite a pre-planned promo / statement, and I didn't get to finish this thing before they were convinced that I had the news, so it was weird because I honestly was about halfway done before Disco decided that I probably had more credibility than all the other people,
then
which
Meltzer
is weird
home,
because because it's weird because this is a person that called me out hard, like as hard as anybody, and laughed at us, and then 7 minutes in, he's decided that he believes me and turned around and goes, oh, I didn't know you were a public figure. That made the whole thing now make sense to me. It's like, why does it? Like, how does
that? No, it doesn't.
It doesn't until I got to say the rest of it, like, which I needed to say in terms of what the actual relationship was with the WWE. It doesn't make sense to say you're a public figure. You must be telling the truth. That's bullshit because Saturn was a public figure before as well, because he did that TMZ bullshit. But yeah, as it went through, what I was really aware of, if you watch the video one, is Vince just nodding along. And I kind of got the feeling that something was going to come of it, but not something so regular as I was offered. But yeah,
do you want to say that on the show? I mean, it hasn't been said, right? Okay, no, not yet.
No, I'm very
something's in the works.
I'm a bit. I'm like Drew, like that. You know, it's like
you're gonna curse it.
Yeah, and he's been very cursed. So
Corona, that motherfucker.
He's kind of see his point because he was talking before about. We were talking about if his match was going to be in the main event, and he was worried that he wasn't going to go on last, and all that kind of stuff, and especially when Goldberg and Roman was mentioned, and there was no talk about this Corona canceling the event, even as late as early March, and at this point, I'm like fucking 26 days away from flying out. And there was no indication whatsoever that it wasn't going to be a WrestleMania.
Because we were all talking to each other and friends and texting and going, so what are the odds Vince cancels? And every single one of us said, like his song said, no chance in hell. They will have to, the state will have to shut down. He will never fucking cancel. And it was like, I can't believe it's fucking didn't happen.
Let me tell you something even more interesting about that. The first text I sent to Drew, and I looked it up, not for the sake of the show, but just out of interest. The first time I sent him a text going, do you think there's any chance that WrestleMania gets canceled for this COVID bullshit? And he goes, I highly doubt it, but you never know. Or whatever. I can't remember. He said he pretty much disregarded it.
Yeah.
March the 12th.
That was on March the 12th.
Yeah, March the 12th. And on March the 20th, the UK went into lockdown.
Well, did you hear the Triple H on the Triple H show on Corey Graves, where he had said something? It was very interesting, something he said on there. Because they went through this whole thing about how this came about, which was interesting to hear. And he said Full Sail kicks them out every year around the same time because they have a Hall of Fame banquet. So they were going to do it at the Performance Center and they were going to record their NXT show. And Triple H was hearing all kind of shit about things getting shut down and closed. And he called Vince and he said, hey, I think we should leave everything up because it's already set and shit's getting shut down. And they said like that very... I don't know if I think it was Friday or that Monday, the shows got canceled wherever Detroit was. I don't know if it was Raw or what. And they ended up having to use the Performance Center. And when he had called
It was Raw on March the 16th.
So Vince said to him there, he said that was the first time he heard Vince said, we might be doing WrestleMania from the Performance Center. Which is very surprising to me that Vince did not, if that's the truth, that Vince didn't hold out hope until the last possible fucking second, because I can't imagine he would even entertain it until you got no choice. I don't know. I mean, a wise man would say, okay, let's have 50 plans in case one shuts down as a backup. But so it was that long before that he was thinking they weren't going to actually have WrestleMania because of all the shit that was getting shut down. Once you guys got like locked down, it was like, uh-oh, no planes in and out.
Yeah, I mean, it was officially declared a pandemic when Bill Gates decided to buy a pandemic for himself on the 11th. But I still think that, and I think that was what inspired me to text Drew and went, do you actually think, because that worried me when they said it's a global pandemic.
Yeah.
But then the whole ban of the UK and all that didn't follow up until, in fact, I think originally we weren't banned. I think it was around about the 13th where Trump banned the other European countries. So we were still coming. And then I think on the Monday he banned us, which would have been the same day as Raw. So by the sixth, in the space of that 4 days, I went from asking him to Trump banning Europeans to me not being able to go on the 16th. So within 5 days, it just all fell to pieces. And our discussions about that were all after I couldn't go, because we only began discussing what are they going to do, because after we got shut out. So we, as a group, only began talking after the 16th and whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's fucking nuts how quickly it all just escalated into this bullshit that we have to watch and subject ourselves now to every week.
And, you know, it's funny because how bad we thought Raw was before, and we thought it wouldn't get any, couldn't get any worse. And then it was like, okay, now do the same garbage show, but in front of nobody. Like, it's, you know, and I do feel for what Drew has to go through, because it's like he's going to be that champion of that is remembered for this, if you call it era, whatever it is, until we get fans back, and having to go through garbage. And they do him no service by him fucking big fucking smiley picture on Raw, where they've turned him into fucking Diesel with a smile. He's doing the interesting stuff, like swearing on TV. I guess that's the new thing. Because AEW started with that. Now it's like, okay, now let's all say shit. Because that's a big, shit was always a taboo as well. And now apparently shit is not a problem.
Yeah, that's the funny thing. So just passing on, where do we start here? All right, so for, first of all, like if we are going to do a little bit of Raw before we move on to other stuff, which is more interesting to talk about, I will say that his stuff has been fine in terms of, apart from the smiley face and all that, he has been booked strong. Like he's, like they barely laid a finger on him. Like if we were friends with Andrade instead, then, or anybody in that group, Zelina's group, we'd be feeling more sorry for the fact that they've been one of the most buried stables of all time. But I think for the greater need, you have to do that for Drew's sake. So I think I'm happy with that. Obviously, not as good of friends with him as Derek, because I didn't get invited to Tampa specifically. So Derek will really.
Oh, I wish he, you know, oh, he, you know, that special love we share. I just can't get enough of that fucking line. It's, we have a different kind of, he texted me from Raw with that fucking voice of his where he's trying to be Mr. Radio. He did text me from Raw after Brock kicked his ass. And, you know, so we have a special kind of love together. He really wants me to go to Tampa, and I really want to go to Tampa, but...
Oh, my God, it's that's pretty... I close my eyes, and I'm podcasting with him again.
Don't get hit in the face with the teeth while he's talking. Jesus Christ. Are we going to cancel our subscriptions to the network like them, too? I laugh with their bullshit. They didn't cancel any fucking subscription, fucking liars. Tell me.
My tweet from one of my ghost accounts was so good. It was like, how can you not support your best friend?
Yeah, you're taking money out of the man's pocket. You won't do that. But you'll watch Raw every week, and when the pay-per-view comes, you're not going to watch? You're a fucking liar. You are a fucking liar. The same way I was lying to you guys when I said, I'm not watching WrestleMania. I mean, come on. What am I going to do? Not watch?
But I enjoyed the contract signing this week as the best thing that he's done since he won the title. I thought that contract signing was the second best thing that they've done since the lockdown. First being the Undertaker in the graveyard when he was going, Alan Jones. Since we're being real and all, and I thought that was the best, and I thought this was second. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed the contract signing better without the crowd there. Just I don't know why.
I do too, because certain things you need to hear. Yeah, because you could hear a fucking without people with the what, and fucking shut the fuck up, or you know, with the boring chants, you're like, you need to hear that kind of shit.
I mean, Creepy Seth has been good in this without this crowd. I mean, he was good when he was like being, you really wanted Owens to kick his ass because Seth was such a prick with his promo before when he was telling him that WrestleMania is his best day and Owens has never had a good day and all that. That was a good promo as well. I put that up there. And Seth looked like it was a good creepy cunt this week too. And I think it was rough getting to that point though. So it was good. I probably would have enjoyed it even more if it started, but by that point, I'd suffered already with Apollo getting to wrestle twice on the show and all that. I mean, he's just desperate filler. But
talk about a good time for him to start getting a push when everybody was getting cut, because he would have been cut.
Well, I wonder if he'll be cut anyway, because as we move on to actual news, this week I broke a story about how house shows were going to be gone, like no more live events, etc., which means that the consequences of that will mean that a lot of performers are only being paid their downside guarantee. And on top of that, obviously you get paid for television appearances, mm-hmm. but that's going to leave people way, 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 way short. And I'll give you an example. So I'll use Drew, because he's supposed to be the top guy in the company. Instead of working 200 days per year, which a normal champion would do, they would headline every house show and they would get the most money from the house show because he's on top. He loses 150 appearances from the year. He loses 75% almost of his income because he's still going to get merch. He's still going to get pay-per-view money, even though that's massively down now because it's down to network sales. So I don't know how that's worked out anymore. And he's still going to get extra money for appearing on Raw. So he's going to get his downside plus his merchandise, which is going to be down as well because it's not going to be any merchandise.
Nobody's there to sell, yeah.
Yeah, plus, sorry, I forgot. The downside plus merchandise plus appearances on Raw. Plus there's going to be pay-per-views and there's going to be very, very few house shows. But the term house shows will be gone and it'll be special live events, and also the touring teams, the A and B, is going to go. Now, if there's no A and B, there's no need to have two brands either, because the brands ain't going to be touring. So in order to stretch these guys' appearances across and at least get Drew somewhere near 200 dates, they're going to have to put him on SmackDown. And if they're going to have to put him on SmackDown, they're going to have to put everybody on SmackDown, and they're going to have to cut this brand split down, or get rid of it, sorry, and cut this roster down as well, is what I meant to say, and just have all of these people across two shows, because there's no way you're going to continue to have 60 to 90 wrestlers employed working once a week, because the wrestlers ain't even going to put up with it, because they're going to have, some of these guys have $50,000 downsides, which is probably less than me and you get paid. And then they're hardly going to get booked on Raw. So if you're looking at an Apollo Crews before this situation, he would have been getting 50 grand. Plus he would have been on Raw five times a year. He would have earned 55 grand a year.
Yeah. For not fucking working. Yeah.
Yeah. If you look at someone like Titus, who actually hasn't appeared, and I can't see him being bought out to have an empty arena match, 'cause he stinks. At wrestling, not as a person.
Well, you don't know that.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say. We could get him just literally pulling in his downside. Plus, he could get money for doing some charity bullshit events and appearances and all that kind of stuff. But it's going to be fucked up, because a part of my story was all of these people now, if they want to go, they will have to grant the releases. Otherwise, they're going to be pulled up big time, because they're already violating California ABC law, which you probably know more about than me, because I only read up on it. And as soon as they start violating that across more states that implement it, then they're going to be fucked, because they're going to be breaking laws all over the place. And these independent contractors that aren't granted their releases are going to go and bitch and moan to people if they're not granted. So they're not going to fuck around. All these releases are going to be granted, as I said in my story 5 days ago. And these pricks at WrestleVotes who have been credited with this story in various websites were a good 48 hours behind me, were they not?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's funny, because then you send the picture of the what they reported, and you're like, didn't I just say this in the voice text the other day? So,
It was literally like a line from, they literally chopped out what they perceived to be the most interesting line that they could claim as a story and used it as their own. It's fucking bullshit. Like, but obviously moving the news, doing the news still on my Patreon page, but also having this second format with Russo once we discuss exactly what we want to do, then that's going to be a big difference, mate, because I don't think people are going to be as likely to steal my shit and pretend it's theirs when it's on two different formats. So yeah. Mm. But what do you make of that? Well, I know we've talked about it privately, so I feel repetitive maybe.
Yeah, obviously we haven't told the audience kind of stuff like that. It is, I mean, right off the bat, my first thought was the same thing. Like I said it to a friend and we both thought the same thing right off the bat. Oh, they must be thrilled. They don't have to fucking work as much. And then you go, yeah, but they don't get the fucking money either. And then you go, oh, that's, yeah. Well, now it's a little different. My thought too is, obviously they have to get rid of the fucking Universal title, right? It's a guarantee.
I would think so. I would think they would wait till next Mania, though. I don't know if it runs. I don't know if they get rid of it now. But at the same time, what you just said is interesting, because if you're looking at a Randy Orton, who's got a contract he's got no dates on it, but he's probably expecting to earn around about $4 million a year.
Mm.
Now, he's racked up this $4 million for about 15 years now. So if he turns around and says, Randy, you need to turn up and work once, maybe twice a week if we get rid of the brand split, and you get your merchandise sales, which aren't going to be all that, and do this, that, or the other now and then, and he goes down to, for argument's sake, $2 million, is he giving a shit that his workload just got chopped in half, even though his money got chopped in half, if he's added 5 or 6 extra years to his career and he gets a shit ton of time at home with his family? Is he thinking, thank fuck for that, I'm at home most of the time?
Yeah, I think the established are. And then you worry about, like, they all say they use the house shows to like work on shit and practice almost, and see what gets over with the crowd and try new things, and that's like their fun. And now it's like, well, there is no quote-unquote practice for them anymore. You go to the performance center, but that's not real. You're not in front of a crowd. You got to get live rounds if you're going to do practice. So, I mean, Mitch Trubisky throws a great ball in practice. I don't know if you know that. put anyone against him, it's a different fucking story. So I think it's the same type of thing. You kind of need to get out there to get your chops and to groom yourself. So, I mean, back in the day, it's got to be great, because the old timers got to be laughing at this. Like, they were home, what was it, 30 days out of the year they were home? Like, the Hogan era and all that kind of shit?
That's what they say, yeah.
Yeah, they were saying they were on the road fucking constantly and doing 2 days on fucking Sunday, shit like that.
I researched that was not actually true, but, like, yeah, I think they did. They've always done 4 days a week, and Hogan used to work. They used to do matinees, and then they would and they would go and do the evening shows again. So they would actually legitimately wrestle 6 times a week. But then also, when they went to the TV tapings, which they would do once a month, some guys would wrestle like 4 matches.
4 times a night. Yeah, I mean, they used to do that for Raw, for God's sake. I remember being at one of those Raws where they would do it from pay-per-view to pay-per-view. And it was, I want to like look back at some of these, because it's, they have to be piping in the crowd because you're dead by the last time. And what's funny about that was when it was an hour. So it was the 4th hour that the crowd was fucking done by. So, you know, they're done in the 3rd hour now.
Well, you've got
already
to think that those shows are filled with a lot of here's Mean Gene with update and from inside the pages of the WWE magazine and all that. I don't think it was. I reckon it was probably 3 hours of content. Because you got to add like commercials to that, and then Gene fills in. I reckon even those shows were 3 hours of content.
I remember the one thing that stood out so much to me. I was at the Cow Palace, San Francisco, and they used to have that Gene standing on the platform thing, and they would come out. One of the wrestlers would come out, and you would do that interview with the ring behind you. Remember that? They'd come out, and they did Boss Man. Boss Man came out. He's a good guy. Did his whole fucking spiel, finished, and Mean Gene then goes, "All right, folks, we got to do that again. Here we go." And fucking, it was like, oh, that was no good. We have to retape. And that was before, like, shit was out. You know, I mean, you knew it was fake, but it wasn't as widely popularized as it is now that it's fake. So it was like, wow, that was the first glimpse inside where they were just like, yeah, this is a television show. We got to retape that. No problem.
I've not seen that, but I have seen things where they had to redo the match between, or they didn't air the match between the Rockers and the Hart Foundation. Yeah, and I believe there's a story that Vince McMahon made Savage and Flair redo a match because he just thought it was shit.
That is so interesting that kind of stuff happens, because it's like, it's real interesting. I was at the first show the Million Dollar Man had music at. That was Survivor Series Showdown in San Francisco. And it was like, wow, I can't. And it was taped. It was weeks before. So we went there, and it was like, they don't advertise what it is either. They just advertised it as, you know, you're going to a live show. And all of a sudden you got there. I mean, it was probably somewhere you could have found this out. But as a normal person, just, okay, I'm buying tickets because they're coming into town. And then you go there and you see all the banners and the fucking lights and cameras. It was like, holy shit, look at this. Completely different, you know?
I don't think, for us, I don't think it was like that at all, because we only really had house shows. We didn't go to anything that was on TV until we had a pay-per-view called One Night Only in 97. Mm-hmm. I was too young to go to SummerSlam, '92, I think, my dad. I wasn't too young to go, but I just don't think I was Austin's age now, so I don't think my dad was really paying much attention and really saw it as a real interest that he needed to, like,
it must kill you now, though, because you could have said I was at that one, which was big time, you know?
Yeah, you can, but, like, what can you do about how old you are, you know? Like, sure. I mean, it kills me that I didn't go to Hell in a Cell in 98, and that I wasn't going to Mania's 4 years earlier, because then I would have missed, then I would have got to WrestleMania 17, etc. But I mean, you can't do anything about how old you are. I mean, I've seen enough anyway. Just unfortunately, it's been during an era where, I mean, the Ruthless Aggression era was okay. I mean, there's only a few Manias that I've been to where I would really honestly swap the experience for my money back. I would say 27, 35, 29, I would probably rather have the money. Two of those in New York, actually. But yeah, I mean, other than that, they've all been like pretty decent and acceptable. I mean, it's an experience. You'll always overhype it up to what it will actually deliver. But it's more about the overall thing now for me. It's all the weekend anyway, and the holiday, as opposed to the one event. I enjoy it because I don't pin my whole hopes on them delivering. You can't rely on this company. You can't put your hopes on them to deliver the show that they should deliver. When they do it at 30, when they do get it all right, it just blows your mind. So
yeah, it's always shocking. And I think the crowd is, it matters so much, because the crowd would make something even better than it would be normally. Just the excitement of everybody going fucking crazy,
dude,
you know?
I tell you, the crowds at 21 and 22, before they went to stadiums, and even the crowds before they went to 7 hours, were all better. The crowd at 30 were live, and they stayed alive, and it didn't feel so stadium-ish, because they must have been so loud to generate that kind of sound at in a stadium. The 30 crowd was so hype, even though the Taker result killed them. And for a while, it took them a while to get into the Bryan match. But prior to that, they were really live. But at 21, I think that was the best crowd that I remember in the Staples Center, because it was all kept inside. The show was like 3.5 hours, and you were into everything that they put on that show. And it's my first one, but as far as like crowd participation goes, I still look back at 21 as the best. And I would like to attend another arena WrestleMania again at some point. If they do go to the 2-night sting, then I would certainly lean towards going to the one which is rumored. I mean, I heard it was going to be 1 night MSG to open it up, and then 1 night in the stadium. If they do that, which I don't think is going to be the next one, but the one after maybe, I'd definitely rather be at the MSG one than being in the stadium. The stadium thing, it's just what it is now, because obviously it makes more money for them and it makes it look like a bigger event. And a part of it now is the huge set and all that. But
yeah,
you know, it doesn't have a great atmosphere.
I don't like an open top. That bothers me. I don't like an open top. It's not as loud. I like it where it's roaring. And that's how it was, you know, New Orleans was fucking roaring because it had that roof on it, you know?
But then again, I do feel that, like, I did enjoy the WrestleMania 31 in the sun, even though you got the Taker entrance as the sun was coming down and whatnot. I think I just like that.
Were you in the sun or were you in the shade?
No, I was in the sun.
Oh, me too. I was in the sun. It was fucking cooking myself. How funny is it that we didn't know each other? Both there. I'm like, my fucking backyard, and I don't know you at that point. I knew of you, though. I would listen to you.
Next to me too. I had an empty $500 seat next to me, Jesus too, because my friend didn't come.
Unfucking believable. Are you planning Los Angeles?
Oh yeah, if it is there, unless, or it could be in Tampa.
God, no, they said 2 years is Tampa. This one's set to go.
But they're also the backup for this one. If this one doesn't go ahead,
oh my god!
Can you imagine all this bullshit? Oh my god! This bullshit still going on next year.
You know what it would be? It'd be like, yeah, they're doing Mania, but it's every fifth seat only. You'd be like, motherfucker. It'd look like shit. They couldn't do it in the stadium then. It'd look like fucking hell. Hell, I'm even fine if they do these things and say everyone's required to carry a mask in with you. You have to have a mask on. That's fine. I don't care. Fill the fucking place. Have people there. And just have your mask hang off.
They could finally get that mask record. I mean, Rey Mysterio would be like, coining it in off this.
You know, that's the way to go, because I bet you anything that if Mysterio came out with a mask that had a fucking mask in the front for the mouth and nose, people would buy that thing because kids would say, I could wear my fucking mask around. And you would fucking sell that, and people would be like, because you see me, I had my Deadpool mask. I wore it to work. My Iron Man helmet, I wear it to work. I'm like, good, I have an excuse. I could wear this now. So that is a fucking idea. Ray needs to fucking get on that shit. He wants to make some money. Tell him I only take 5%. Thank you.
You'll be lucky. we've been talking a little bit about different times of wrestling and stuff on this show. Well, anything to stay off Raw. There's a conversation in our group chat last week. We talked about it on the show last week. On the end of the show last week, we said we'd go through it. This article by What Culture, I put it to the top of the group. Like, I put it back into the chat again, if you can have a look.
Okay.
The 10 worst years to be a wrestling fan, written by some young twat who didn't live through this time at all, because he has none of these 1990 years on his list, except 1990, where he's clearly looked at a decline in business from Hogan and the Warrior. Let me run through his years.
Okay. And you're an encyclopedia with this, where I used to pride myself on it, and that has faded away, man. I can't remember when, like, I could do that whole name the pay-per-view, how every match finished, all that shit, until they fucking overloaded you. It's like I used to have all the He-Man figures until they became having 5 billion different characters, and you were like, you're just adding shit, you know? So that's how I feel with wrestling now. They're just adding shit.
Well, I put notes next to all mine, so it helps. So he's gone for number 10, 2020. which is this year. Obviously down to,
and that's only 10.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Already it's number one.
Well, I almost have it there on mine. Number nine, he's gone for 2013.
What happened then?
He's put, I can read it all.
Yeah, please do, because I have you connected to the phone, and I don't want to shake it up. You might get disconnected, all that.
WWE called it a story because sometimes they're liars, but it didn't feel like, did it feel like a story you wanted to stick with in October, 2 months fully removed from Daniel Bryan's first title victory and defeat at the hands of the Authority when he was being buried on TV? Did it feel like a story worth continuing on when WWE tried to cycle him out with a Big Show or a ring filled with champions and the only one that getting cheered was the one they tried to keep shunted back? It's basically complaining here.
Isn't that good, though? What the fuck? That was a good thing.
Well, they're complaining that they weren't pushing Bryan. They were pushing Bryan to the back.
Mm-hmm.
And we were moaning about it at the time. So they're basically saying this is a year of resistance, basically. They're saying the 2014 Royal Rumble was the payoff to all the disdain. But the fractures in the relationship between WWE and the ticket buying audience were born out of this relentlessly unsatisfying booking. They also moan about the booking of Punk and the Rock Cena rematch that they did at WrestleMania 29.
Huh, I don't find that to be a bad year.
Certainly not. One of the worst.
No, not at all.
They've gone for 1990 at number eight. The very year your writer first clapped eyes on Vince McMahon's vision of both of pro wrestling, including, so he says he started in 1990, same as me, included here in both assertions of a nostalgia bias and to acknowledge that the said vision was on the slow road to ruin. The Ultimate Warrior's rise and feud of Hogan provided end of the world visuals at the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania, but the scale proved rather literal. The United States boom period was ending along with Hulkster's reign. Warrior as a proto Diesel, Shawn Michaels, Cena, Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins was stripped of his uniqueness the second he sported the belt worn so proudly. He was absolutely no different at all by Hogan for much of the prior decade. The product seemed to lose a bit of sheen underneath him, as evidenced by the big babyface wins at SummerSlam 90, failing to stop the show feeling heel heavy, and the 1990 Survivor Series gobbledygooker just minutes after protecting next WWF champion Sergeant Slaughter in defeat. I would not have this year anywhere near the top 10.
Well, that year the right time. There? No.
No. Number seven, he's put 2009, a year that ushered in the guest host era on Monday Night Raw.
Okay, thanks I can see that. Go ahead.
Thanks to Donald Trump buying the show in a vapid ratings grab by his billionaire buddy Vince McMahon, 2009 was also the most assumed. Than the dear of John Cena era before 2010, each offered even more of the same. The champ went to war with Randy Orton in a feud that WWE dared to suggest was the generation's equivalent to Austin Rock. It speaks to the shitty decline of the product that were arguably right. I got this in my list too. But even a generous comparison to the lengthy pair wouldn't have justified them competing off against each other in five consecutive pay-per-views. It's not all on Cena, of course. Orton absolutely fucking sucked.
Remember everybody was like, with this Orton Cena already, it was like 8 billion times, yeah. And they were like, this is the last time ever.
So too did Legacy, as did their feud of DX, because Triple H fucking sucked too, as did the booking of the women's division that fed off the toxic locker room culture and dated, but oh God, he's one of these social justice things that women were mistreated, even though they were paid. WrestleMania fucking sucked hardest because it was plagued with so many of these corrosive elements, all for the satisfaction of the company's
what Mania
audience.
Was that?
25.
What happened at 25? Okay. Oh, that we had the, was that Michaels Taker?
Yeah, no, but that was the only good
the second
thing.
One?
Yeah.
Okay.
Number six, he's gone for 2010, which immediately comes after. He's put NXT was birthed and immediately dropped on its head with a talent show obstacle course format that actively worked against the talent that had been plucked from FCW like aliens from Toy Story that they knew they were. WrestleMania saw off Shawn Michaels, and with it one of the only in-ring bankers the company had left. Like, that's not going to make the year worse, is it? His trainee, Daniel Bryan, was right there, of course, but would have to wait on after being buried right out of the gate. Had missed flashes of inspiration from CM Punk. The year was live or die by the success of Nexus. The group literally tore up the show on arrival, having survived the aforementioned NXT. NXT was the reality show. The Nexus was the group that came out of that over the summer months to shake the foundations of SummerSlam, Go Home Raw, and then lost and lost and lost and lost again.
The worst SummerSlam main event ever.
That's 7-on-7.
Yeah, that's the worst.
Number five, he's gone for last year, which I'm sure you can remember.
Yeah, I mean, these recent years, they run together. They very much bleed. It's the same fucking awful year.
He cited the wild card year as one of his main wild card rules, one of his main reasons. Plus, we had two out of three matches, and then Kofi Kingston's reign was just reduced to nothing. So he's implying that he enjoyed the reign and then just had it ended by Brock, just ruined the whole run.
Because, I mean, the build-up to him getting the title was fantastic. They had everybody going crazy, whether you like it or not, that everybody was jerking off to it. So that was good. The wild card, as stupid in real life as that would be, you were glad to see it because you could actually get people on the other shows, even though they didn't really need to be in wild card to do it because we'd been seeing it happen constantly. So that... Other than the name of it by, you know, making no sense because everyone always did it anyway, that didn't bother me either. That actually almost helped.
At four, he's gone for 2002, which I would never have put here either. He's put everybody lost in 2002. Stone Cold Steve Austin lost his mind. Endless creative frustration reached an explosive conclusion and walkout, having already lost the top star to Hollywood before all of it reached its head. McMahon lost his mojo back when he still cared about having it. His admittance and acknowledgement of the product sagging from glory days prior was encouraging, even if he was losing his grip on how to arrest the slide. Raw and SmackDown lost sizable proportions of the audience despite Michael Rapport's assertions in the network documentaries. That's the Ruthless Aggression documentary. Mm-hmm. WWE lost its F after losing to WWF in court. The major WCW holdouts from 2001 lost their luster. By the end of the year, infamous company rivals the NWO and Eric Bischoff had been put through the company ringer to such an extent it's as if they never existed as opposition in the first place. Kane lost the biggest push of his career because his opponent wore a mask and pretended to fuck a corpse. So yeah, that's 2002, and then he's on to 2003 immediately in third.
Was that when Bischoff first came?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, that by itself, I think, helps that year. That was fantastic that he was there. I mean, I think they could have done it a little better where it was more of a surprise because they were showing him in the back first, like it was nothing. It was like, whoa. So I think they kind of fucked that up.
I thought the first year of the band's bit was good. Like, they all went all out with it and just made it into a big... I mean, there was a lot of, like...
They tried to outdo each other.
I'm stealing this person from you, and I'm stealing this person from you. I didn't like the way Triple H was given the belt, the title, instead of winning it. I mean, I did obviously always going to disagree with booking decisions, but sure. I tried to think about how bored I was, and I don't think I was bored.
I don't either. I don't think it was awful because, I mean, it was... pretty new into them taking away WCW, you know? It wasn't that far removed.
I still think that you had enough. All right, yeah, Austin did leave and Rock was done by the summer, but then you started to build Brock through this year and the, like I said, the brand extension was still, you know, was still fresh at this point because they'd never done anything like that before. Mm-hmm. And you were excited for the NWO at the start of the year and it wasn't their fault that, you know, Hall got caught that he was still drinking and Kevin Nash kept getting injured. And what can you do at that point? Yeah. Hogan had to turn babyface. But I think Hogan got some of the biggest reactions in history. And that's why they had to turn him babyface. Because when they brought him back in, like, people were going fucking nuts because he's back in his company after 9 years.
And is that the year of Rock and Hogan?
Yeah.
Oh, then Jesus Christ. And that's a good Mania.
Yeah, that's not in my top lot. Yeah. So 2003 is in mine. He says the counter argument to this is, what about SmackDown? The blue brand was relatively well booked in the first years of the original Blansit, but considered the ramifications of the style. With even the slightest bit of hindsight, next best thing, Brock Lesnar, was ground to dust thanks to the schedule and gone within 2 years of his debut. But that didn't happen in this year. It's the next year. The brand was bereft enough in his absence to require fucking Bradshaw to go on a long title reign as they searched for stewards. I think this person has written the wrong year, because he's put 2003 and he's talking about Bradshaw having a title run, which didn't happen until 2004.
Well,
so
was he
this person?
Was he on the way with all his shit, like with Eddie and the like La Migra shit?
No, not at all. Because Eddie doesn't win the belt till 2002, and this Bradshaw character still in the APA. So they got this stuff. He's got his research wrong here completely for SmackDown. He's got his research correct for Raw. He put, not least because Triple H was the dirt goddamn worst on the other side. Raw mid-card was decimated at the start of 2003. So he worked on stubbing out every headline threat for the rest of the year. He put his thumb on Scott Steiner, his run in January and February. He played racist and went over the overpressed Booker T at WrestleMania. He stunk out three pay-per-views with his best buddy Kevin Nash, and he pinned Goldberg before he put him over. Yeah, I understand all of that stuff on Raw. It doesn't necessarily make it boring, because Triple H was building himself up with heel credibility. I think possibly on the SmackDown side, what he's trying to say is that they didn't build any heels, so Bradshaw had to get the belt next year, although it's not been put clear. And that's just me defending the article now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I still don't think this makes it specifically bad. I think the only thing you're really looking at in 2003 and why it made my top 10, which we'll go through in a minute, is because you're looking at this year and it really does stick out to you that Hogan's gone, and Austin's gone, and Rock's gone, and you are dealing with all of those people now really being gone. The Attitude Era is like fully dead here, and you're having to build new stars. This is the middle year, I think, the year in between. You've built Brock, but you're going to lose him again, and you haven't got Orton, Cena, and Batista yet. So this is the kind of period where you're looking at those guys, and you're relying on, I'd say, Undertaker and Triple H here at this point, and Shawn Michaels to sort of carry you in terms of giving you content. Because even if you look at WrestleMania 19 that happened this year, you're going to end up losing Hogan, Rock, and Austin that they bought onto it. And that was very much like the start of getting the part-timers onto Mania to make Mania look good. And then once they left, you're left with a injured Kurt Angle, Brock Lesnar, because those two guys were in a main event. Triple H is still there, but his reign's boring as fuck. You're just bringing in Goldberg, but Goldberg's not really working in this company because they're not booking him properly. They're making him do stupid shit where he's doing segments with Goldust and stuff. So yeah, I think it's valid to have that one on here. Number two, they've gone for 2018. They've mainly complained about them going to Saudi. They put if you invested in any
that makes
of
the
that,
year bad.
Yeah, they've put Oscar won a quality Royal Rumble. Charlotte grew into the role she'd long been pushed as the company's best all-rounder. Ronda Rousey arrived and kicked fucking ass. And if you're wrong, you disagree. Becky Lynch rose from the dying embers of her own babyface spoilings to become the man. Evolution, the first of all female pay-per-view by the company, was one of the best shows of the decade. Was it fuck? One of the best ever, taste depending. My taste says you're wrong. If you've invested in any of that, though, fuck you, pal, because WWE are about to care less about your cash than they ever had before. Eye-watering television deals were piled atop a 10-year guarantee, a 10-year agreement with Saudi Arabian Sports Authority, with a sports washing initiative that continues to this day, mostly because they got a show on despite the controversy surrounding the death of journalist Jamal Khashoggi, whatever his name is. WWE weren't allies of women. They were arm in arm with a regime that will continue to suppress them. Ugh. This is bullshit. Like, there was a lot more shit wrong with 2018 than them going to fucking Saudi.
Yeah, and I'm like, and Ronda showing up was one of the biggest things that ever happened to the company.
Well, they're saying that, and they're saying that WWE basically told you to shove it up your ass because they didn't let women wrestle in Saudi Arabia. So all of a sudden, that makes the year. It's like, hold on a minute, you have to pretend you didn't see it, and they didn't give them a women's pay-per-view, and it's all
disregard. No shit. I think that was the women pay-per-view year?
I think the women's pay-per-view was given to them because they went to Saudi.
I think so too, right? It was the because we,
right. It was like, you have this and Will, and the boys will go over and get this money. Like, how can you deny all these performers like all this extra money? I mean, especially now, I expect them to 100% once this is done, they're going to do more than two shows a year in Saudi from next year, because they're going to have to. They're going to have to make up this money to people. Otherwise, all these people are going to be like, what's in it for me?
That's true.
Like, I mean, because there's no difference now between the system at AEW and the system at WWE in terms of they don't run house shows. They just take TV and they just take pay-per-view. And at least AEW actually have pay-per-views with pay-per-view, like pay-per-view percentages. And that, again, 2007, they've gone for like a moral reason.
What number are we on?
Number one.
Okay.
2006 was the worst year on television. Batista went down hurt. John Cena went from getting 50-50 reactions to getting booed out of the building. The specter of Eddie Guerrero hung over the product, not least because they wouldn't let the legend actually rest in peace. Rey Mysterio was pushed and then punished for being his best mate and being over. Last of Ernest, babyface Rob Van Dam was popped with pot a month into his run.
Mm-hmm. Popped.
ECW fell apart within weeks and sent Paul Heyman packing from the company, but 2007 reminds you of how little any of that mattered. The Benoit family tragedy cast a shadow over the industry, its ills and the company at large. A series of suspensions that spun from increased pressure on the laughable wellness policies made stories impossible to see through. Not like they even felt important after a real life death had intervened. I still enjoyed the stories. This went beyond bad episodes of Raw and SmackDown or crap angles with no stars. This show suddenly felt like it shouldn't be airing at all if the double murder suicide was a possible byproduct, indirect or otherwise. Yeah, they should have just stopped wrestling forever. You fucking Mark. That's his list.
Mm-hmm.
We got 5 minutes left. We'll do my list.
Give a couple points of each year of like why.
Yeah, yeah. So okay. I'll be quicker with this.
Sure.
Number 10, I've gone for 1993. 1993 looked so different to the 90s or the 80s that we'd seen, because gradually, you know, you'd see a guy go, you know, like we lost Warrior for a bit, then Warrior came back, mm-hmm. and Randy Savage retired and he went got put on commentary, and slowly, slowly, you lost all these people. But in 93, you had Hogan there, and then you lost him completely. He came back for a bit, but then he left after King of the Ring. Ric Flair lost that retirement match at the start of the year. Warrior was fired at the end of 92. Bulldog was gone. Savage was on commentary. Jake Roberts left in 92. They tried to push Lex Luger with the Lex Express because Vince needed that, you know, that smiley big guy who he liked the look of. And just 93. I actually enjoy 93 personally because... Mm-hmm. It was the first year that my dad actually got the cable, the Sky channels through, so I could actually watch it without having to borrow tapes from people or watch the free show, the highlight show or whatever on Sky One. But I can see how this would be a bad year for other people when you've got WrestleMania 9 and Giant Gonzalez and Mr. Hughes and Adam Bomb and all that. Like I said, I didn't mind any of these people. For me, it's probably just nostalgia, though, so I have to look at the year and compare it to this being the actual year where you really noticed that the 90s were done, like with Brett being champion and stuff, which I didn't accept initially.
Okay.
What do you think?
I agree with that. Like 93 is very, I don't know, it has that colorful feel to me, you know, where it's cartoony.
Yeah, I mean, the rest of the years are very much some of the years that the other guy had, but I But the fact that he hasn't got 93 on there and he hasn't got my number one just confuses me completely. 2003, I've got, that's the year we already covered, mm-hmm. when Triple H was hogging the belt on Raw. Goldberg wasn't used properly, but I've also put, like 93, this was really represent the end of another golden era, which was the real end of the Attitude Era. It was that in-between year between Ruthless Aggression and the Attitude Era. 2016, I've put the draft saved it, because the first 6 or 7 months could have taken 2016 into the top three. 2016 was WrestleMania 32 year, where WrestleMania was fucked by injuries. So they had Triple H win the Royal Rumble, and they had...
Yeah, Dallas, Roman. Right? Fucking wreck. Yeah.
But then the rest of the year, that when they got the brand extension back, SmackDown was really good for that... that 2 hours a week at the time. You remember how good it was with all the stuff that they did on there. Ambrose was originally the champion on there, but then they moved over to AJ, and it was all that stuff with the house that AJ built and all that.
Yeah.
And he was feuding with John Cena. Like that was really good.
Mm-hmm. SmackDown's always been better.
Yeah, but the first 6 months really puts this in the top 10, and if it hadn't been for the draft, it could have been worse. 2010 is a year that I've got the same as the other guy, where I've said the year started with Brett coming in, mm-hmm. which I liked, and then I thought the Nexus angle was good, even though they buried it, but that's why I put this ahead of 2009. I've got 2009 number six, where I've put they ran out of match combos, totally stale. I even skipped Mania that year, and that was the year of Cena Orton, mm. Cena Orton.
I agree.
So we move into my top five. Number five is 2019, which is last year. Mm-hmm. I put they ignored their own announcement from 2018, where they made the announcement at the end of 2018 where they said they were going to listen to the fans from now on.
And nothing changed at all.
Yeah, and 2018 actually comes later in my list. 2007, I've got at number four, but it was nothing to do with Benoit or anything like that. I think the Cena run was getting insufferable at this point. They had to put the belt on Carly at one point on SmackDown, because SmackDown was so bad. I think this is where the brand extension started to fall to pieces, and that's why I've got 2007 here. 2018, I've simply put, they had to apologize at the end of the year for how bad it was. So where that guy is turning around and saying, oh, it's down to Saudi and stuff. Yeah, they did go into Saudi and they did a lot of good stuff. Upcoming in 2017 wasn't a great year at the end, because it started really good going into Mania and whatnot with Brock and Goldberg and the Orton leaving the Wyatt family and all the stuff they did. I thought the stories going into there were good, but the brand extension started to fall away at the end of 2017 when Mahal had the belt. But here coming into this year, you had a really hot Nakamura and Asuka winning the Rumbles and whatnot. And then you had a good WrestleMania card at WrestleMania 34. And you had a good SummerSlam as well at 2018. But somehow, after SummerSlam was done, after Roman got the belt and announced he had leukemia, and then Ronda had her belt, but nobody could lay a finger on her, I think it just got really, really stale. I don't think they ever knew how to recover from Roman just leaving like that, and it was just fucking rough. No Cena either, no Roman, not pushing any new stars as well. They just had Rollins doing the intercontinental title stuff, the intercontinental invitational and all that. But that was just the real start of matches going through two breaks instead of one.
Oh, God, this is the start of that, huh?
Pretty much at this point, yeah.
Something wrong that you even remember this stuff. I don't know whether to commend you or say what's wrong with you.
I put some thought into this list.
God.
2020, I've put this year, and I said it's likely to move up.
And what number is this?
Number two.
Okay.
And I said it's likely to move up unless we get some fans, but
yeah,
it's difficult to move up when you've got number one, 1995, a year that didn't even appear on this guy's list, a year where Mabel won the King of the Ring against Savio Vega while they cheered ECW, where Bret Hart's main two feuds were going from Bob Backlund to Isaac Yankem, which is Jerry Lawler's dentist and who had a dentist gimmick, to Diesel having the belt through the entire year and doing the worst business of any champion ever. I don't even know what more I can say. At least they introduced In Your House this year, which I liked, which was a good concept that they continued. But I don't
They had Pam Anderson and Jenny McCarthy as well, so that helped.
Yeah, but the WrestleMania was terrible.
It wasn't that good.
Just look at the Royal Rumble. They had to reduce it down to somebody coming in every 60 seconds because you didn't know who anybody was. They had like the Blues Brothers and they had, oh my God, I can't even remember because I don't know who they are. Let me have a look just quickly here. I'm going to go to Wikipedia and I'm going to tell you all the people that were in the Royal Rumble in 95.
Jacob and Eli Blue.
Yeah. Are you looking at the list now?
No, you just said the Blues Brothers. I knew who you were talking about. 8 Ball and Chains, right? Or is 8 Ball and Skull. Those were the two that they became.
Yeah, they went on to be those. So Michaels was the winner and Bulldog was the runner up. Then he had Eli Blue.
There's a great finish though, right? That one was a good finish.
But listen to the roster. Okay. Duke Drosy,
yeah.
Duke Johnson, Jimmy Del Rey.
Okay.
Sione, who was the replacement hat shrinker for Samu.
Oh, boy.
Tom Pritchard, Doink the Clown, Quang.
Is that Paul Diamond?
The martial arts expert guy. He was terrible.
Oh, that's Rick Martel. Savio Vega. Yeah, Quang.
Yeah.
Okay.
Owen Hart, Rick Martel, Timothy Well. Bushwhackers. Yeah. The Bushwhackers were back. Bushwhacker Luke. Jacob Blue, King Kong Bundy, who made his comeback, who faced Undertaker this year's Mania. Mm. Mo, Mabel, Bushwhacker Butch.
Mo is? Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm thinking Oscar. Yeah, okay. Mo, Mabel. Yeah.
Lex Luger, mm-hmm. Whose push is completely done at this point. Mantar, Aldo Montoya,
mm-hmm.
Henry O. Godwin, Billy Gunn, Bart Gunn, Bob Backlund, Stephen Dunn, Dick Murdoch.
Jesus.
Adam Bomb, Fatu, and Crush.
Wow. Yeah, you could almost pick the winner. Jesus. There's like nobody that's... It was like Lex would have had a chance, Bulldog, Sean.
Well, Lex is done at this point because Lex... They gave up on Lex the year before. He didn't win the title at Mania. And then Tatanka turned heel on him in 94 and... The main heels coming into this are the main heels throughout the year would be the Million Dollar Man's Corporation, which, you know, lost to the NFL at WrestleMania. And then they tried to recuperate them with Sid, but then Sid immediately goes heel on Michaels, lose two matches to Diesel, and then can't get the Intercontinental title off Michael either. So he's completely buried.
The first in your house and then a lumberjack match in your house, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And then
so I know the old chase.
And then he goes to chasing Woods because it's better. But I mean, the thing is that this has to be number one because this is the year you look at it and you think they're in fucking big trouble because Nitro starts as well. And then in 96 as well, you've got the NWO going up against what WWE are doing. I think the only reason I give 96 a pass is because they start to react here. Like Stone Cold wins the King of the Ring in 96 and,
we have so much to thank WCW for. If it's not for them, I don't know what's going on at this point. You know, because they were cruising along normal, and then Nitro came along to stop that shit, you know?
Yeah, that's why I think progressively it was getting worse, and I think that 95 was when Nitro came was the big wake-up call. I think in 94, when you're looking at the other side, they got Hogan and Savage, and you got Jacob and Eli Blue and all these people in this Royal Rumble, and you got to be tempted to turn the channel over. At this point. Like, when Nitro came along, it was the perfect opportunity because it was a time to launch when WWF was at their absolute worst. I mean, they didn't even have a figure. They didn't have toys at this point. They were going so bad because the Hasbro deal was done in 93. And they didn't sign with Jax until 96. So this company had two and a half years without any fucking toys. Can you believe that would ever be the case? And this was the only time. And as I said, 93 is on the list. 94 gets a pass just because Bret and Owen were feuding. And I know that, I mean, and I know people will look at that and say, fucking hell, do you see the matches in 94? How can you put the year of the ladder match in 94, Shawn and Razor? How can you not love the Bret Owen feud because it was good? And then obviously Michaels and Diesel were just trying to, were together, but they were starting to part. So you got Nash over in this year, and you did a lot of stuff in this year, which is why it gets away with it. And obviously, and then you didn't go ahead with pushing Luger, which I didn't want them to do anyway. And then Undertaker returns with the Undertaker versus Undertaker main event at SummerSlam. But for a while, it was good because when he returned and he was with the Million Dollar Man and stuff, that was actually a decent story for a 10-year-old, 11-year-old kid. I don't remember not enjoying that when Ted DiBiase was bringing The Undertaker back and then The Undertaker had to fight The Undertaker and stuff. It sounds like shit now, and the match was shit too, but still. I mean, that went on main event instead of Bret and Owen's cage match.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, so I can't put 94 in there. I'm not saying it's one of the best years ever, but certainly not top 10. But yeah, this is bookended by 93 and 95. And that guy, okay, everybody has their own worst year, but that guy, he's a professional wrestling writer, journalist, and he doesn't put 95 in his top 10. I just don't understand how that list is valid. And that was my whole point. That's what I got pissed off about. Because I wonder,
can you tweet him or message him somehow and ask that question, see if he gives a reply? And don't even say mean about it. Go, how could you not have 95 in that list? I want to see what his reasoning is. What he's got to have an explanation. He's got to have a fucking... I want to hear what he says.
Let me tell you some of the main events that they did here, right? So they did that terrible Royal Rumble, and Diesel and Bret went to non-finish at the Royal Rumble. Then they have Diesel and Shawn on the semi-main event behind LT and Bam Bam. Mm-hmm. The King of the Ring is the final is Mabel versus Savio Vega. The main event match is not for the title, but it's a tag match with Bam Bam Bigelow and Diesel against Tatanka and Sid.
Oh man,
where Sid walks out because he doesn't want any part of Diesel. Then the main event at SummerSlam 95 is Diesel versus Mabel.
Mm-hmm.
In 95, they get done with Diesel and he gets beaten by Bret in that small package.
I love that match. Yeah.
And they have this weird thing at the 95 Survivor Series, which is the wild card match, where it's heels and faces mixes. So they're like, here they actually turned around and said, it's good guys and bad guys mixed together, which actually...
I don't even remember that.
Oh, it was weird. It was like...
I'm going to have to go back and watch it, actually.
Yeah, it was like really the start of them trying to think about doing different shit. But yeah, I mean, as I said, 96 doesn't make the list because I give them a pass for getting their asses beat by the NWO and at least trying to make some sort of effort. But anyway, we wanted to do that on this show because Raw is really not worth occupying.
No, it can't. 30 to 40. You can't do a whole review of Raw. It's impossible nowadays. So we'll just talk wrestling and news that's going on and shit from the past and stuff like that. So that's what we'll do. So is that
I enjoyed doing this list. Yeah.
Yeah, it was much better. I was much more entertained
by that. I mean, I know you say you don't remember but from my stuff and his stuff, could you at least make a top five off the top of your head?
Off the top of my head, I mean, this year, you know what's funny? It's like maybe the last 3 years are up there in top five. It's been nearly unbearable the last three.
Well, I have them all, Cav. I have them at... Yeah. I have 2020 at 2, 2018 at 3, and 2019 at 5. So
it's really hard to beat this year for me because of the crowd thing. It's like, would I rather have 95 going on or what's going on right now? I that's very difficult. The people are better now, but oof. This is fucking teeth pull. This is real fucking hard for me.
Yeah, I think for me it's not there yet because we had all that build up to everything they'd done up until Mania, so they got derailed was good. And I'm still...
And they kind of flopped, though, right before it.
because it was a good build weeks before it. And then it was like, how did they fuck this up? Remember that? They were doing the matches or some weird
shit. On the SmackDown
shit.
side. Mm-hmm. Yeah. With Goldberg coming out and with Roman coming out and saying, I'm next. And I think that's where they started to lose the plot. They started to lose some steam. But still, it was decent up until that. We had a decent Royal Rumble up until that point. And I'm still hoping that they come back and SummerSlam is in some sort of setting where there's fans and I mean, the last part of the year should be fucking amazing. I mean, that's
you would think. Thing.
I mean, if this thing gets resolved, dude, we're gonna have gonna NFL, we're gonna have NFL, baseball, NBA, good wrestling, all running at the same time. It's gonna be fucking. You're gonna want to stay in. Like, that's gonna be the irony. If this thing blows over, otherwise. If it doesn't, like, we could get a whole ton of shit canceled. But I'm optimistic because baseball have said they're going to start without fans in June and they can still play 100 games. So
they
that
were saying,
means that
I heard it was July. They were looking at July 4th starting that whole thing, 4th of July over here.
So everything could still come back. So there is still a chance. But I don't think there's an – if this is 6 months behind closed doors and they only have September, October, November, and December to salvage this year, then this is going to go to number one.
Yeah.
Without doubt,
quite a few months. Yeah. And you would think, you hope when it comes back to normal that they're going to do a hell of a show, like to blow it up, welcome back people. You know, I think there's going to be a big deal about welcome back.
And like for me, like I look at this 95 and I think, geez, and I think as an adult now, in terms of how much business they lost, who they were putting out there, how much they were struggling to create stars, and my 10-year-old self, or however old I was at this point, 11, 12 years old, looks at this and goes, "This was a year that I watched every minute of and accepted every decision that they made. And if Mabel got pushed, then Mabel got pushed. Yeah. Like you just don't think about that shit.
No,
at
not
that
at
point
all.
In time.
It is what it is.
Because
you
it
just take it.
Because it." Yeah, because it is still a lot of squash matches. And I mean, Raw, obviously the good stuff still happens on Raw, but you know, it's kind of like you just take what you're given because you're not overexposed.
Yeah, exactly. And now you're way over with all that shit.
Yeah. So yeah, for me, I have to look at it objectively and say 95 probably makes more sense, even though for me personally, I enjoyed it as a kid. So it's really hard for me to put it at number one. But I tell you, in 2 months, it ain't going to be hard for me to agree with you and put 2020 at number one.
Yeah,
for sure.
All right. All right. Well, we are done and we are through with this show. If you want to see any of my nonsense, everything you could go to for me is at Lingus Mafia, whether it be Instagram, Twitter, or Patreon. It's all Lingus Mafia. Billy, you're at Lock Betting. Is that correct?
You know what? I am at Lock Betting and I've been underselling like Lock Betting and saying that there's no point to it really at the moment. But I was starting to research Belarus football. And I have an 11-2 record so far over the last 3 weeks. And also, we have Money in the Bank coming up on May the 10th. And the betting lines are out now. So if you want to make sure you don't get the shitty prices once WWE guys start betting on it and stuff, then make sure that you get involved now at lockbetting.com. Otherwise, you can go to dirtysheets.net or the dirtysheets.com. I've had to buy various domains because Vince Russo and Disco Inferno can't say my website right.
Go to the Dirty Bird.
I am actually now at the dirtysheets.com. I bought that domain name this week. If they're plugging the wrong site.
Yeah, no shit.
Because he kept saying .com, the dirtysheets.com.
Because
like,
normal people have .com.
Yeah, well, I didn't own that at the time, but I do now. So I've got dirtysheets.net. I've got thedirtysheets.com. You can also go to wrestlevotes.com and get my website because I bought that domain name before they could register it themselves. So even though they can fuck me over with the news, one day they're going to have to buy their own domain name from me and it's going to cost them thousands and thousands of dollars to get it off me and I'm never going to let it go for less. So wrestlevotes.com also takes you to my stuff, which is the only stuff that's important because I'm the only one giving you the proper news anyway. So there you go. I enjoyed this show today. I think this might be the best show that we've done this year.
Yeah, because we're only doing one show, so it's very easy to get through. We don't have a time constriction.
Well, I like the subject. I think we should find more things to do.
Yeah, when we're doing running through things that were entertaining or horrible back in the day, it's better than saying, so, how about Raw this week? That's a lot different.
I'm wondering if I can get you to watch WWE Superstars on the network.
Very difficult. I'm trying to make time to, I got to go through
Would you watch anything on a WWE network? Would you watch any kind of documentary or anything?
Of course. I love WWE Network.
Have you watched the Ruthless Aggression series?
A couple episodes. I haven't watched all of them. I watched like two.
Well, there's only five. So maybe next week you could get out
there. Oh, yeah. I totally can. That's fine.
All right. That'll be something.
Okay.
All right.
All right. And remember, kids, Derek Mantilla is a horse tooth jackass.
New recording on this?
What do you mean, a new recording?
Where he's talking about Tampa, and then Drew says, you're full of shit.
Oh, I didn't put that in the beginning of this one. I'll put it at the end of it, if you want. I have our regular beginning where he says he's a piece of shit.
Because you sent me saying I'm a genius. And yeah. I thought, what? How are you a genius for pulling the clip? Like, I saw there's nothing genius about this. And then I waited to the end, and I was like, I'm glad I did, because I was about to...
Yell at me.
I was just wondering what I was confused about where the genius was.
I was so proud of myself. It struck me. I go, oh, this is perfect. I got to pull the clip of Derek bragging about how Drew wants him to hang out. And then I'm going to put the clip of Drew saying you're full of shit afterwards. So
can you imagine Drew sitting around with his wife and he's going, oh, yeah, I've invited one of my great friends to dinner.
The problem is he'll eat everything with those snacks and the fucking teeth. But fucking watch out. His wife better
take
cover.
Derek and his wife just like roll through the roly-poly through the door. Like, I wonder what Drew's wife's thinking about his friends.
How you doing, Drew? I'm glad to be here. Blah. Fuck. Fucking hell.
How is that a radio voice? I mean, that is his voice. Your impression is correct.
Yeah, it's the
people that gave him a radio job. I'm not understanding. Like, how poor is the competition in Arizona State?
God, you know what? Maybe we do that one of these days. A whole, like, we'll put that maybe on a man show or something. A whole Derek Mantilla show where we just fucking clips and just rip the piss out of him the entire show.
I think we got to put it here because I think his ego.
He'll hear
his
this.
Ego,
yeah.
His ego definitely goes towards the wrestling show. I don't think that he feels that he'll be talked about on the man show.
Yeah, no. So, all right. Well, that'll be an upcoming show. The Eat Derek's Asshole Alive show. That'll be coming up. So, all right, kids. I'm Kev. He's Billy. We'll see you next time.